I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt.
Have you ever had one of those days, Scott Johnson, when you just say oops a lot?
Yeah, today.
In Hearthstone?
Sure.
You didn't calculate correctly, and then you didn't play that eight minion, and you shielded up your druid, and you're like, wait a minute, now I don't have enough mana, and I need to get the mission, the quest done with the 8+, and then you're just like, you know what, my brain isn't working today.
We've all been there. I completely understand. That's okay. Listen, come Monday, it'll be a fresh week. You can keep playing that game for free. You'll be fine. It's good to have you here, of course, and always hanging out with Tom is fun. But we wouldn't be a show without guests, and today is no different. We have a couple of guests with us. Join me in welcoming to the show Christopher Cox. He is the co-founder of oneofus.net. There is some fine podcastery going on over there. Christopher, welcome to the show.
So much. It is indeed a nonstop lifestyle of talking into mics and let's just admit it, drinking beer.
Sure. Why stop now? Let's continue that tradition.
No shame in that. Yeah.
Do what you got to do.
Normal.
Yeah. I hate to ask this because I should know it, but where are you from? Where are you based?
Austin, Texas.
Oh, all right. See, Austin's a hotbed for this stuff. We have friends down there.
I have drank
hot being the key.
A lot of beer in Austin in my life. So
yeah.
Keep it up, man.
Yeah. Good job.
It's a fine tradition here.
You're carrying the flag for the rest of us. Also joining us all the way from beautiful Irvine, California, it is Ryan C. Davidson. He works at Blizzard, and he's an all-around rad dude. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Rad dude, not to be confused with Bad Dude, which was one of those games that I cut my teeth on. That's how old I am.
Dude, Bad Dudes was great. It was a Data East game, I think, and it was like Final Fight style, but way its own thing. That's a great game. You already have more points. In my mind, and we haven't even started the quiz yet. So you're already winning. Well done. Bad Dudes. Oh my gosh. You really brought it back when you said that. Anyway,
Bad Dudes versus Dragon Ninja. Is that the same thing?
Well, it's like Double Dragon. Remember Double Dragon? It's a well-known game. And a lot of people go, when you first think of side-scrolling beat-em-ups, your brain goes, oh, like Double Dragon. I would say, no, your brain should go.
Tropes chapter.
Bad Dudes is where your brain should go. Bad Dudes.
Agreed.
Yeah, see, we're already off on the right foot. But let's get into it. We have got a lot to cover today, and Tom will begin it with these.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, I assume we had a week of something.
Yeah, we did. But now I got Bad Dudes, Bad Dudes.
What you gonna do?
Yep. When I play
with you. Bad.
Hey, Hollywood Reporter says Stephen Daldry. Not Roger Daltrey, Stephen Daldry. He's the guy who directed Billy Elliot, The Hours, and The Crown on Netflix, is in talks to direct an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie for Lucasfilm. The project is at the earliest stages, has no script or actors attached, but everyone's pointing out that Ewan McGregor has previously said he'd be open to play the character again.
I don't think there's anything wrong with him playing it. He's able-bodied and ready to go. He was amazing in this last season of Fargo. It reminded me that...
Indeed.
As Obi-Wan
Kenobi. As Obi-Wan Kenobi. Very strange. I would be... It, to me, if you're going to figure out a way to bridge prequels and the new Star Wars efforts, this is how you do it. So, Christopher, you're a movie guy. Is that a cool idea? Is that a bad idea? Do we need fresh blood, or can Ewan step into the shoes and make it happen?
Be ridiculous to have fresh blood at this point. Ewan McGregor wants to do it. I think there's, to some degree, he wouldn't admit it out loud, but I need to redeem myself for the prequels. I still want to be part of the, want people to remember me fondly in this role. And obviously, he's a really good actor. I think the idea that they're doing an Obi-Wan spinoff comes as a surprise to absolutely no one. I mean, they were talking, obviously, about the Boba Fett one, and that kept getting pushed back, but Obi-Wan was... with a huge gap of missing time seemed to be the most obvious choice to do it.
Yeah, we're not talking about, you know, sort of pre-prequels era that we even need to know about. What we want to know about is post-Anakin, that whole mess. Where did you go? What did you do? It doesn't have to go right up to Tatooine Central era, but I'd love it if we could just fill in some of those gaps. It seems like he's the right age for it, actually. It's like you can age into the role naturally. Like, it'd be perfect.
Yeah. If George Lucas was still in charge, we would get a early... We'd be like, oh, no, it's Obi-Wan, but he's just a little kid. Sad because his mom died.
Yeah, I don't want any... something like that. I don't want any more kid stories. Ryan, where's your head at on a...
There was no mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're back to Anakin.
Yeah.
So, I think Ewan McGregor would be great. I think that... have you seen the YouTube where they recut the original prequels to just make it all about Obi-Wan Kenobi in the first place, and he was actually the main character? Have you guys seen that recut?
No.
I haven't seen that cut. I've heard about it, but you've seen it, it sounds like.
It is
a fantastic storytelling. It's exactly what I think a lot of fans wanted the prequels to be, and being able to take that to a fourth one where he's actually figuring out what it means to be alone in the universe, and I don't know, maybe he's sowing the seeds of future spoilers for some of the, you know, episode 9 and 10. Sowing the seeds. That was a pun.
Right.
So, a little ray of sunshine wherever he goes. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. I think it'd be good. I would pay money to see it. And since nobody pays money to see movies anymore, I think this would be good. I would go and see it.
Yeah, that's the rumor these days. That's not happening as much. In fact, we may even have a story about that. But I guess the only other thing I would say is there's a lot we don't know about Obi-Wan's time, and that actually gives us an opportunity here. We know a lot about Han Solo. We know a lot about what led to episode 4, so Rogue One wasn't that big of a surprise. Sure, you get new characters and you get the journey and all of that, but we kind of know where things are headed, and while we kind of do know where Obi-Wan ends up, I think this is a real opportunity for them to do some new stuff, like actually explore his character in a way that isn't just a familiar rehash of what we've already had. It's really the only complaint I have about all the new Star Wars stuff is that they're playing it very safe in that regard. And I feel
the same way. I feel like I would like to see them tell me entirely new stories from an entirely different part of the galaxy. But I understand why they don't want to do that till they finished the trilogy, till they finished the mainline saga, because that becomes your new mainline saga, is let's tell you brand new stories. And that's risky. So they're playing it safe with these anthologies to kind of get their feet under them. I think Obi-Wan gives you a chance to kind of straddle the line. You guys are talking about it, where we don't know what Obi-Wan did. We know his character, but we don't know anything he did. He didn't have to be on Tatooine that entire time, one assumes. He could have been going out and doing secret things in totally unheard of parts of the universe.
Sure. Yeah, I see.
I just pictured him sitting in a bar and drinking heavily like Superman in Superman 3, just doing shots the whole time.
He worked at the cantina, actually. That explains why he knew the place.
Oh, see? Yeah, he worked for that guy. He's the story I want to know, is the guy that won't let the droids in. I want to know his backstory. So let's...
What happened to him and a droid when he was a kid?
Now, I don't know if you guys, have you read any of the extended universe stuff that's considered canon?
Not the new stuff. I haven't. Tom, I know you have.
I'm in and out of it, but the one thing I would say, well, stuff about Obi-Wan, I'll be curious to know if they're going to stick to their guns, because they have explored some stuff with his character post prequels, post Star Wars, what have you, to little hints of maybe what happened. But the main thing I wanted to just say is, you guys, I know you're like, I don't have time for all that shit, but you should make time for the Darth Vader standalone comic, because it is hysterical.
Oh, wow. All right.
He's got his own C-3PO and R2-D2, except they're murderous, like, psychopath droids. And
oh, my gosh. So good. I love them so much.
Have you
Dr. Aphra is now one of my favorite Star Wars characters, and she exists entirely in the comics. She has her own series now, but she started in that Darth Vader series. She's fantastic.
And that stuff,
she pals around with the droids you're talking about.
That stuff's canon now, right? Like, we can count on the comics as canon. So that character could show up in other places. All right, that's cool. So have you just
the novel, the animated series, they're all considered canon now.
So Christopher, have you read any of the Christy Golden books that are recent in the Star Wars stuff? You should read.
No, I haven't read any of the actual novels.
You should read those. Those are really, really, really good. That's what I keep hearing anyway. Hey, she works with you guys at Blizzard now, Ryan.
Really?
It just occurred to me. She's got some kind of, I don't know what she does up there, but she's up there all the time, not just writing books for Blizzard, but she's hanging out in the offices, and I don't
know. There are a lot of people who work at Blizzard now.
I've got a job hanging out in the office.
Yeah. As far as you know.
We just need a good storyteller around.
Yeah.
We just hang out.
Yeah, why not? I mean, as far as you know, we're there right now. It could be.
Yeah. Anyway. MoviePass
stands there and entertains the Ewoks like C-3PO and Blizzard.
You know? There you go.
MoviePass announced it's lowering its monthly subscription to $10 a month. $10 a month gets you unlimited theater access at 90%+ of the theaters in the United States. This is a service that's been around since 2011. It used to cost $30 a month. It had some restrictions. Now it's down to some limited restrictions. You can only see 2D movies, and you have to be near the place to buy it on the app, or you have to use their card to buy it. You can't buy in advance at most places. AMC Theaters, not happy about the $10 a month charge. They're trying to figure out how they can get out of participating. But the problem is the way MoviePass works, it just emulates a MasterCard. And so AMC would have to stop accepting MasterCard to be able to stop accepting MoviePass. MoviePass is just taking a loss. They're paying full price for tickets and hoping that enough people don't spend all of their money every month that it makes it worth it. Now, $30, that seems like a fair bet. $10 is probably unsustainable over the long term, but it certainly has a lot of people interested in this service now.
Yeah, $10. I mean, that's less than a ticket on a Saturday for me, a single ticket to go see a movie. So I guarantee you, we talked about this on Daily Tech News Show this week and been a bunch of chatter sort of offline on Twitter and things about it. I would pay this and I would absolutely take advantage of it. And I would be one of the problems. I would be the person that goes to five movies that month and got it all for $10. And the problem is, because there's no real add-on services here outside of what theaters make with concessions, which isn't connected to this at all, there's no upsale. So there's no best value. This is like a free-to-play video game. There's no best value option. There's no any of that. It's just $10 for everybody. And I really don't think, I think the large percentage of people who do this for 10, who either switch their current accounts to 10 or go into this now as new, I assume the site's up now, are going to completely take advantage of this. Even if they just go once, you're screwed on the MoviePass side. And now I hope this works because I want it.
What MoviePass is trying to do here, Scott, is show the theaters we can bring people into your theater. You've got a problem getting people to see these movies, especially the older ones. So there's also a restriction. You can't see a movie more than once. Once you've seen a single title, that's it. Mm-hmm. They're trying to convince the theaters we're good for you. So I don't think they intend to keep it at $10. They want to get people into the theaters and start showing them your concession sales go up because of us. Let's partner, because about 6% of the theaters do partner with MoviePass so that you can buy your concessions and everything in the app. And I think that's the long-term goal of this service.
Okay. Well, all I know is
the other part here.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. There's the other part here that I think you're glossing over, is that they are going to be collecting information on this user base the whole time you're using it, right? It's like, hey, $10, you can go see any movie you want, and I know which movie you want to see, and I'm going to see the patterns of genres that certain locales are using, that certain demographics are using. Like, if I can pay $40 and go see the movie every Friday with my family, because I need, you know, I got kids, I got to take them, and it's too expensive to go otherwise, they're going to get that data. They're going to see what movies are going to sell, and then that's going to influence the industry.
Do you think I can jack that up by seeing all the Jane Austen movies I would normally skip and wait for video, and just, like, you know, it's like FilmSack and Netflix have completely jacked up my queue or my recommendations in Netflix. Well,
this is what Fandango already does. This is exactly what Fandango does, is say, let's partner with the theaters to get everybody to register and buy their tickets through us so that we can collect all that information.
Yeah. And then that information, what leads to lots of things. It could
Skynet.
It could be Skynet, or or it could be Hollywood going, all right, well, we know that the Upper Northwest is really, really into this particular genre. Consistently over 3 years, we see this data from these users, so we need to make more movies like this because clearly those are selling more.
Yeah.
That's both good and bad. It kind of scares me a little bit. Christopher, are you, I mean, you're probably all in on this idea, right? $10 a month? Well, you'd be dumb not to.
I never have to pay to go see movies. I'm a film critic, so it doesn't reflect at all. I'm like, I wouldn't even consider it, because I'm like, yeah. Why? Like,
yeah, that's true.
To pay money I wasn't paying before and see just the same amount of movies?
Sure.
No, I would. I, from reading comments from the company, it sounds to me like they're not flat out saying it, this is going to go on for like 6 months. And the idea is get a lot of new people signed up for the program with plenty of warning after that period. Like, oh, by the way, this is going to go back to $30. It's going up to $30. But by that time, people were like, wow, this is a really good deal. I really like this. Mm. Stay with it. I don't think under any circumstances, $10 a month is doable in the long term.
It doesn't feel sustainable. That's AMC's claim. That's what they're saying and why they want sort of out of it, although they may have other motivations too. But the way I look at it is, even if they raise that price later, they may have to have some sort of, I mean, they may need to treat this like a grandfathered in program a little bit. And maybe the $30 users get more benefits. There's more reasons to get it or something, and entice people to change their monthly fee. But just to raise it to 30, I feel is like just a weird temporary solution. So I don't know, and we're not going to know for a while. I also have some concerns because our favorite theater chain here is owned locally, and it's this huge, beautiful, awesome theaters. There is a number of them. They're all owned by the same same family that owned the Utah Jazz for a long time, and we love it there. But when we I don't know that they're going to buy into this because they're not a national chain. I don't know if they
have to buy into it. That's the key to it. It is just a MasterCard.
So that's all it is.
Does nothing. The only thing that MoviePass has to do is, because they want to make sure you're not using this to, you know, you can go shop at Kmart, is they restrict where you can use it. So they have to authorize the locations.
Yeah.
So as long as they've authorized that chain of theaters locations, it should work.
So the only, I guess, so let me rephrase. If AMC figures out a loophole and gets out, that it concerns me because it seems like my local
there's just no way.
Yeah.
MoviePass objected.
It doesn't seem like it's costing AMC any money, right?
No, I mean, it's not.
So why do they care?
MoviePass's theory on why AMC cares is that AMC has been having earnings trouble, and this is a way to deflect investor concern somewhere else.
Oh, interesting. Well, all right. So it also just could be the way it looks. Like purely this is an optics problem where it looks like suddenly movies, the valuation of film going is being dropped to $10 a month. And that seems crazy to maybe some people, maybe some investors, but certainly to AMC. So maybe that just looks bad and makes everybody feel like, well, here we are, one more stone or one more nail in the coffin of the theater going experience. We're all going to watch this stuff at home and on planes and on our iPhones. And maybe that's what they're worried about. But I mean, I'm doing this. I'll go to movies more than I ever have if I get this for $10 a month. Like, it won't even be a question. For 30, probably pass.
Well, nobody watches movies anymore. We all stay home and watch TV. That's why Variety is reporting that Michael Sheen and David Tennant have been cast in the lead roles for an Amazon BBC co-production of a 6-episode series based on the book Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. Premiere first on Amazon Prime, wherever Amazon Prime is available, or on BBC, where Amazon Prime is not available. It'll be distributed by the BBC in all those markets that Amazon doesn't service. It will show up on the BBC in the UK after it premieres on Amazon Prime there.
Tom, you've read these, right? These books?
Yeah. Yeah, we read this for Sword and Laser.
And you liked them?
Oh, they're so good.
Okay.
They're so good. So it's about an angel and a demon who are dissatisfied with their work and they commiserate, and the apocalypse is coming too.
Got it. So I'm guessing Angel is Michael Sheen. David Tennant's probably the devil.
Yep. He's, bingo.
Yeah. All right. I'm in. I'm all in. All you had to say was those two names plus Neil Gaiman plus Terry Pratchett, all content I don't know anything about yet, but I'm all in on all of it. So totally, totally stoked. Ryan, is this your cup of tea?
Yeah, I'm all in. And I already have Amazon Prime, as with everyone. So I'm into it there. I get to stream it. You just put David Tennant in anything and I'm just going to eat it up.
Yeah, right. So good.
She is just like a cherry on top, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're both great.
Chris is so excited. Look at his arm. He's had him up there for like 5 minutes. He's so excited.
So yeah, Chris, stoked. Is he there?
I'm not Chris. I'm people covered in fit. Tom will get it.
Nice. Well, good. I don't want to wait though. How long are you? Can you wait? Or because I feel like I can't wait. I want this right now.
Want it right now. I mean, I'm a big Pratchett fan. I'm a big Gaiman fan. And honestly, Good Omens is that the only other book in my life that I ever had to put down because I was laughing so hard than Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's one of the funniest books ever written. It's super smart. I reread it at least once every few years, and I picked it up when it originally came out. And this casting, I literally just can't think of anyone who would have been better in these parts than these two.
I agree. Bring it on.
Well, but nobody watches TV anymore because we're all playing 78s. The Great 78 Project is digitizing 78 RPM discs. Kids, ask your grandparents. They're the big records that only have one song, but they're the size of an album. Anyway, the project is uploading them to archive.org with the help of George Blood. Recent uploads include the great hits of the 20th century, like The Happy Monster by Chubby Jackson, Jungle Boogie by the Bobby True Trio, not the Jungle Boogie you thought, and I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas by Vicki Dale. You can go to great78.archive.org and learn more or join the effort or just listen to some crazy songs.
I never want.
Yeah, I saw Ricardo Montalban singing Baby It's Cold Outside. And I was like, I must have this.
Are you kidding me? That's in there? All right. Well, you just turned me around on it. Now I'm all excited. I had no idea. So there's sounds like there's a lot of cheese in there, but is there anything that's like, I don't know, like important to music? Other than, you know, the 78s as a format, I guess, is cool. Like it's a blip in time, but this feels like you know, it's like 8-track or something. I don't know if the music itself reflects anything cool about that.
There's some amazing blues records that were only put out on 78. There's a ton of jazz and classic opera. There's Edith Piaf in here. Judy Garland stuff is in here. Perez Prado, Duke Ellington. Like, there's, you know, I gave you the funny names because I just thought that would entertain you. I didn't want to turn you off to the whole thing.
Well, I'm going to check it out. I'll just say that. And there are a ton. I'm looking at it now. There's a ton.
Cab Calloway, Minnie the Moocher. I mean, that's a classic.
Yeah.
Oh, that is a classic.
There's a song here by Herb something, Hent, called 16 Old Ladies Locked in the Lavatory.
It's a song called Pussy, Pussy, Pussy.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's about kitties, I'm sure. There's Blueberry Hill, I know that one, yeah. But
Tokyo Boogie Woogie.
Yeah. Dragnet, nothing to do with the show, I don't think. And nope. There's a bunch of these. Gloria, I don't think it's the Gloria we all think it is.
I want to point out Noel Coward, Don't Let's Be Beastly to the Germans. This is something that I just came across today looking at this. It is a song about how after we beat the Nazis in the war, let's not be bad to the Germans in general because they have good music and food.
Sure. Hey, here's one for you. This is timely. Easy Payment Blues by Rudy Scooter. That could work with today's NFC chips and, you know, fancy phone paying. So there you go.
They're really selling me on these titles. 1044 Form A, the shuffle.
But it's a good time for
yodel.
This.
Yeah. Both kinds of music.
There you go.
You got to it, the polka. I was waiting for somebody to bring it up. The classic polka collections are finally going to be saved.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no kidding. This is great.
Somewhere weird. It's ears are burning. Yep. I sensed something awesome in the force.
Yeah, I can feel it now, like a thousand voices dying to terrible music.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to sit here and look at this if I don't move on. Hey, Brian Cronin, writing for CBR.com, talks about the Star Trek comic strip that ran in British comic magazine Joe 90 before the TV show Star Trek started airing in the UK. Now you'll see some date confusion because the comic came along in 1969, which of course the TV show premiered in 1966 in the US, but it didn't premiere in the UK until 1969. Artist Harry Linfield was only given publicity photos to work from when he created the strip. He didn't get to watch the actual show. So the strip features Captain Kurt, shows the Enterprise landing on a planet long before Voyager did it, and other fun moments, including an angry Spock. He just loses it. Soccer with gorilla people. And if you want to get a closer look at it, the collection is published by IDW.
I'm totally into this, man. This is great. Captain, the Adventures of Captain Kurt. That's incredible.
He was often rather curt, to be fair.
Oh, sure. Why not?
He was.
And if you're not playing soccer with gorilla people, then what are you doing? So,
I mean, the soccer with gorilla people, honestly, is not that far off from what you saw in the original series.
Yeah. But it's,
or at least on the animated series.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, definitely.
So this seems like a great thing. I'm going to have to check. Oh, look at this. Oh, my.
Did anyone else notice that Captain Kurt is wearing a red shirt?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, he's not going to last long in this series. Yeah. Oh, this is amazing. Wow. What a great find this is. Like all of our articles, lots of them anyway, we get them from fans of the show, listeners, people who go to our Reddit and check them out. Tom, who gave us this and so much more today?
Yeah, the following folks went to currentgeek.reddit.com, did some voting, did some submitting. Thanks to another Jay Martin, Chris Stivers, I Am Sci-Fi, and Strike It Rich One, all of whom submitted things to currentgeek.reddit.com that we used on the show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Redditors. Real quick, before we move on to our pop quiz, we'd like to give a chance for our guests to talk about who they are and what they do. Christopher Cox, tell us about your projects, your site, your critiques, your stuff. Tell us all about it. What's going on? What should people look for when they're trying to find you?
Well, let me just start off by saying I got into this ass backwards being a bartender and a bar manager, and a bunch of guys who had a public access show in Austin called The Real Deal were like my regular customers one night, and they were going to close it down because one of the founding members was quitting. And I was like, don't do that. I'll quit my shift and join you. Suddenly I was a film critic. That went on for like 9 years. Then we formed a website together called spill.com, which I got pretty huge for a while, where we were all animated characters as film critics. You can still, if you look up spill.com on YouTube, there's a giant archive of the videos there. And then when that broke up, I went off and started my own site. This is oneofus.net, which was basically a podcast network. We definitely focus strongly on film and television reviews and name table, like this lighthearted comedic way, except we're all in the same room. we're moving more into video right now. We're actually kind of excited because we're doing a series of on-set videos and interviews for Chief's new movie Bloodfest. They're doing that a friend of mine, Noah Egerton, is directing.
Yeah, it's awesome.
A lot of fun so far. Yeah, there's like several like moderate celebrities in there, TV celebrities, you know.
Sure, no, I'll take them, whatever, man. Battle of the Network Stars, some of my favorite stuff in the world. They're good enough.
Scott, Chris and I figured out that it is most likely that he served me a beer at the Waterloo Brew Pub in Austin at some point, because our paths crossed.
That's so cool. That's actually really cool. Yeah, well, that's awesome. Do check out more of it, you guys. It is all there for the taking. Of course, if you go over to oneofus.net. Great URL, by the way. Probably hard to get that, but well done.
Thank you. No, actually, I was holding on to that one for like 7 years before I even started the site, going, ooh.
Aren't those the best?
That's a good one.
I still have a couple of four-letter URLs I keep for safekeeping. I don't know what I'm going to do with them, but
you have four-letter ones? Really?
I do. I have
GURP. That's a retirement plan.
I have GURP.org, which is funny that we have Ryan here. It's based on my World of Warcraft character. But I got them early enough, and I'm never letting them go. But the problem is, none of them make a lot of sense. They're all like nonsense words, but whatever. Four letters, right? It's good. I'll see if I can retire on that. Ryan Davidson.
You should have gotten GURPS.com, and then you would have been set.
Then I would have had it forever. Ryan, tell us a little more about you and what you're up to, man.
So you mentioned at the beginning, I'm working at Blizzard, but what do I actually do there? So there's lots of jobs. It's a big company. I am working as a portfolio manager for all of the Overwatch websites. Oh, wow. So that includes all the cool stuff we're doing for playoverwatch.com, but I'm also working on all the cool stuff for the Overwatch League and the various related stuff that they're doing. And I just started that role. I actually have been doing that a couple of months now. Previous to that, I was working on Heroes, which I spent a whole bunch of time listening to Core and the other related to podcasts. And it was really fun to hear you guys tear our game apart and build it back up. And it was great. And every once in a while, I'd just drop a tweet and be like, hey, just so you know, we're listening. We really, truly are.
Yeah, I love that, by the way, because when we started Core, the game was still pretty new and we were new. And we thought, you know, I don't know if anyone over there is hearing this or not, but we would sort of wonder that, and then out of the blue we'd get this tweet from you and we'd go, oh, they are hearing us. And then we'd start thinking, well, what have we said? we said anything mean? But I don't think it's any great mystery. We love that game. We love Overwatch. I'm jealous of people like you who get to work in that space.
It is a great job. And I, like I said, you said earlier, I'm in Southern California. I live most of my life up in Seattle in the Pacific Northwest, and I moved my family down here for this job because it was the dream job. It was the job that I always wanted to have. And so here I am, living the dream.
Well, that's awesome. Keep up the good work, as they say. And if you see Christy Golden, this now you won't be surprised when you see her. Because I informed you that she's always there. I don't know why I even know that. Anyway, we'll talk more at the end of the show about people's Twitter accounts and that kind of stuff so people can follow you. Before we get to the pop quiz, a reminder that if you'd like to support this show, and I know that you want to because you ask sometimes, hey guys, how can I support the show? Well, dear listeners, we have a rad way of doing it, and Tom Merritt probably has some of the stuff around him. I always like that he holds these things up. That is a calendar from 2014. We could do a new one. Ooh. Full of art from me, stuff from Tom. He wrote that calendar. There's a current geek mouse mat that's made of puzzle pieces. Along with that, a shot glass, the current geek shot glass. We have USB chargers. We have a print and a custom membership card that come out every month. What is this all coming in? What am I explaining to you? Well, it is the Frog Pants Crate Joy at frogpants.cratejoy.com. We only do this for current geek. And if you are interested in getting one on your own, head on over there and check it out. It supports us. And you get cool stuff every single month. That's at frogpants.cratejoy.com. Time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right. The pop quiz is as follows. We ask questions of our guests in areas of their expertise. They answer them to the best of their ability. If they're terrible at this, it's okay because no judgment. We'd love these guys no matter what they do. However, Tom will keep score the whole time, and he'll at the end say who won. Here's how you know you got an answer right, and this is how you know you got it wrong. I'm going to start.
But the sound effects do not indicate the amount of points you have scored. That is a much more complex system.
That's an important thing to note. I appreciate that, because Tom will give you points for the weirdest things and sometimes take them away for equally weird things. So be prepared. We are going to start off with Ryan. Ryan, are you ready for your topic?
Let's do this.
All right. Your topic is pro Hearthstone trivia. So we picked the one esport you are currently not working in nor worked in the last position.
All right. So I opened all my packs. I don't know anything about the pro meta. I've been so busy, I don't think I have played a single game of the new expansion. But.
Yeah.
But. As soon as I finished opening my packs, I used every ounce of dust I have to craft the Lich King.
There you go. Like you should. That was the right thing to do.
You should. Yes, exactly.
Good job. Well, then you're certainly qualified for these questions. Here is your first one. Who won the first Hearthstone tournament at BlizzCon 2013, which was the first year?
Firebat.
You are incorrect. It was Artosis. Artosis.
Oh, that was before it was professional.
That's right.
Firebat was amateur. We're going to get a half point. We're going to give you a half point because Firebat was the first pro one.
That's not bad. Artosis was the what do you call those matches?
Show match.
Yeah, I love that because it was the first year we saw the fireplace and all that stuff. It was awesome. Next up, what card was nerfed in the Grim Patron deck that made the deck much less effective?
Warsong Commander.
Oh my! Look at the quickness and the correctness.
The
patrons.
Yeah, quarter point speed bonus there.
Yeah, good job. Point and a quarter for that. The patrons that
Minions are bad. Charge minions are bad. You listening, Ben? Yeah.
He also does remove a point from everyone else.
Yeah. I am listening, is what Ben Brode would say. Next question. Who won the Hearthstone finals at BlizzCon 2016, just last year?
It was not Dr. Hippie, because that's who was my champion, and I only got four packs, and I would have gotten five if he would have won.
Yeah. I also rooted for Dr. Pippi, or Hippie, rather.
What is listening right now?
this music back here, you want to hear it? Check it out. Hold on.
I just don't know anything about Hearthstone, so this is like...
Oh, this is all...
This is like other people listening to me talk about Dr. Who.
Yeah, no, for real. Wait until we get to your area of expertise. It's going to be rough. The
when
answer
we start teching decks and talking about removal.
Yeah, exactly. The answer is Pavel Beltyukov. I don't know how to say his name right, but that's...
Yeah, you're going to get a half point for having to listen to us pronounce that.
typical point from Tom. All right, second to last question. At last year's BlizzCon, what's two classes made up the majority of the heroes being played?
I'm thinking mage and warrior.
You are incorrect. The answer is druid and shaman.
Wow, I was totally wrong.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
surprised too.
Listen, it's almost like you don't work. No, I'm just kidding. All right, final question. What legendary?
Not having to deal with Scott throwing shade at you, bonus.
What legendary card showed up in 24/40 decks at last year's BlizzCon Hearthstone tournament?
Yogg.
You are. Oh, you're incorrect. Ragnaros is the correct answer. Ragnaros. Ooh, Ragnaros. I thought it was Yogg too. I would have said Yogg.
You get 1/100th of a point because both answers contain a G.
Yeah, very two G's in case of Yogg-Saron. Well done. Well, those are your questions. Now we turn our attention to Christopher, who will now answer the following questions. Oh, I've got, for some reason, I have no one else's video but Tom's. There we go. Christopher, your question or your area of questioning is Web of Spider-Man trivia. Web of Spider...
I can handle that.
All right. Here's your first one. How many volumes are there in the Web of Spider-Man series?
I've got a push. Sorry, old young ones reference.
Good one.
Web of Spider-Man series, I'm honestly just going to guess. God, these technical questions. I thought you'd ask me about characters. Let's say 4.
You are incorrect by half. It was 2.
All right, get a half point then.
Yeah. very good. All right, next question. How many years was the volume 1 run of this series? Another technical question. God.
The technical questions are going to kill me.
I'll tell you what, if you get the number of years right, you get it, or if you give us the span of years. I guess either way you'd know.
Yeah, if you give us the span, you can figure out the
number. Yeah.
I'm going to say 1.
You're going to say 1, and you would be correct only in that there is a number 1 in the number. However, the answer is 10. 10 years.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, 19...
So tenth of a point.
1985 through 1995 is the correct answer.
Okay.
Next question. Who did the art for the cover of Web of Spider-Man number 1 from 1985?
They're really focusing on Web of Spider-Man here.
Yep.
How about... So you said it was 1985?
Yeah.
How about John Romita?
You are incorrect. It was Charles Vess. Charles
really?
Vess, yeah.
Elf to Spider-Man, okay.
I would have had no idea. I'd have no idea.
He did the art for the best run of the Sandman.
Oh. Oh, I know who that is then. I just don't know his name. Yeah. I just don't know his name, I guess.
Yeah.
He's still around. He's still doing stuff, isn't he? Charles
Vess?
Yeah.
He just did adaptate one of Gaiman's short stories recently.
Oh,
I can't remember what
that
was.
Oh, that's cool. All right. Next question, or second to last question. In 1995, what was the shortly lived follow-up series to this series known as Web of the Spider-Man? So there was another series spun off. What was it?
Yeah, spun off.
Spun off. Man, all the tech, you're not going to ask me, like, what villain? See, I want things to start like
I
that.
I swear, he went practical here.
Yeah, he went very practical. Well, this one's a name, I guess, but yeah. Still technical.
How about just Spider-Man?
Incorrect. Web of the Scarlet Spider. Or Web of Scarlet Spider. And it was canceled after 4 Dan issues. Riley. Did not do well.
We're going to give you a point for the fact that it should be Spider-Man because it's a Spider-Man spin-off.
We agree. Final question.
No, that's fair. Actually, the Scarlet Spider is a clone of Spider-Man. Yeah. In fact, he's been 2 different people. He's been Kane and he's been Ben Reilly, who are both clones of Spider-Man. So.
Yeah, there's too many to count these days. What suit was featured...
Now as a clone of Spider-Man.
Exactly. What suit was featured in the first issue of Web of Spider-Man?
It was 1985, so it would have been the black suit.
You are correct. Nicely done. The black alien spider suit is correct. Those are your questions.
I only knew that was 1985. I was like, when did the Secret Wars come out?
Yeah. Was the black suit a that wasn't a McFarlane thing, was it?
No. It started in the Secret Wars when they were all brought by the Beyonder to like a sort of made up planet to fight versus all the villains, and he found it in a sort of a replicator, but it turned out it was in fact the symbiote that became Venom.
But Venom itself was a co-creation of McFarlane and somebody else, right? I think I have that right.
I believe Venom may have like first kind of become a full-fledged villain in Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man, but I'm not 100% sure.
I'm not either. That. Well, we'll have to have Todd back on the show and talk about it. But for now, we're going to add these scores up. Tom, they've both given their best answers. How did they do?
Well, Chris finished with 2.6. Ryan, 2.76.
Whoa, Ryan.
So close.
Yeah. Take that to the... Tell Jeff Kaplan about that next time you see him. See if they get a little raise out of that deal or something. Congratulations and well done. All right.
Good game.
Yeah, good game, everybody.
I don't get any extra points for the young ones reference.
No, it was pretty good.
What kind of podcast is this?
He may have dinged you for those, actually. No, I don't know. I shouldn't say that. All right, it's time for the forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
As is tradition here on the Current Geek Podcast, we like to predict the future in technology and in culture and arts and entertainment and all those sorts of things. And each week we have one of those predictions. Sometimes it's from me, sometimes it's from Tom, and sometimes our guest puts one in here. Ryan, this one came from you. Do you want to explain your prediction, sir?
I'm just going to read what I wrote. The way I came up with this idea was talking with my wife this morning, and I was like, I'm going on this podcast with smart guys to talk about cool stuff, and I need to predict the future. What do I care about? And then she started talking, and then I said, that's a really good idea. So I totally came up with this idea.
Gotcha.
So my wife is a teacher, and one of the things that she sees a lot of is interactions with the kids and also how the kids interact with each other. And part of that is that nonverbal communication is lacking. And I think that with most things in society, the pendulum swings and it gets to a point where it's so far that it just has to come back. So my prediction is that nonverbal communication is primed for a comeback, right? So in a world of emojis, it's the pendulum's going to swing back to importance of that face-to-face communication. And typing a smiley face into a chat bar or putting it on your website or putting it in your chat or whatever, that's never going to be the same as seeing someone in front of you and seeing all of the information that an actual smile brings, right? That nonverbal communication. So part of this current generation of parents, one of our goals is to demonstrate and evangelize, that's a fun word, evangelize the importance of that nonverbal communication, because we need to make sure our children are practicing it. Because if all they do is send emails or send texts to each other, or even if they're sitting in the classroom using their cell phones to send emotional feedback to each other through emojis, they're missing out on, you know, at least three quarters of the message when you don't do the nonverbal part. So I think that's going to be coming back.
Go ahead, Tom.
You're talking about non-linguistic communication particularly, which I didn't catch the first time I read through this. You're saying like texting, even sign language would count as being something that you're not talking about here. You're saying like smiles and shrugs and nods and just expressions of emotion. I think that's really interesting.
And I'll give you an example. So I'll age myself again. I went to my 20-year high school reunion 2 weekends ago, and I was talking to some of my old friends, and people came up, and I went to the same school with some people for preschool all the way through high school. One of the girls that I went to school with, she came up to me and she said, "Hey, Ryan," and I had a name tag on. So I'm like, "Haha, great." And she didn't have one. So I was like, "Who are you?" And then she cocked her head, lifted her eyebrow, and 20 years of memories came back. I knew exactly who she was. I remember everything that I ever said or did to her, including hitting her in the head with a pinata stick. And I was like, "Erica," right?
Yeah.
But all it took was a mannerism. The depth of communication value in just that face-to-face communication was so much more powerful than 20 years of communicating on Facebook.
That's super interesting. Yeah.
The same thing happened to me, except I got hit in the head by one of my cats, and I realized I used to be a paid assassin for the CIA until they
mocked me. That's all it took, though, for you to remember that.
The Chris Cox origin story,
sure.
Finally.
Yeah. Finally, it can be told. But I love this sort of thing, not just as a parent, but as somebody who is even lately paying very close attention to what's happening online with not just my followership in social media or the fans of the shows or whatever, but learning over time that when I see them face to face, our natural instinctual stuff kicks in. Like, we recognize if somebody's nervous, and we therefore then can act accordingly to help them feel less nervous or more at home. Or we can get the true tone of what they're trying to say and not just assume they're there to attack us, but they actually have an interesting point of view that we should entertain and talk about and maybe discuss. And that gets missed so much, especially in video games, especially in online interactions. When I used to talk to Metzen when he was still at Blizzard, he used to say that they would have they'd have conversations about this all the time. What ways can we humanize each other in these games instead of us just being a nameless fake avatar or a fake username or something that has real no tie to reality? How do we get ourselves closer without actually having to break down the barriers completely and, you know, make everybody have constant video contact with each other or whatever. And those are always interesting conversations because I, first of all, loved hearing that they were discussing those kinds of things, that those things mattered to them, but also realizing it really matters to me. And I could not agree more. Like, they, if you go through your life not having real human to human interactions and reading those patterns and reading those facial expressions and that sort of thing, then you're going to not be ready for those things when you're forced to do them or when you're in a position where you just kind of have to, whether it be through work or whatever. So 100% on board with this. The question is, are we at a place where this we can start seeing this happen the way you're talking about? What do you think sparks the big shift back to nonverbal communication, the way you're describing it?
I think that our current political climate is helping. Like the fact that a lot of people are talking about very heated issues in a vacuum. And I know you're a big, you do a good job of identifying how it's very difficult to have productive conversations when you're shouting out of the megaphone of Facebook or Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. It's very hard to have meaningful conversations there. And I think when you can bring this divisive subject matter of whatever we're talking about in the US or in the country about race or about any of that stuff, right? When you can bring that to the dinner table and have a conversation with your kids about it and then bring their friends over and have a conversation with them about it, that's where we're going to start to see the shift, because blasting it out on the internet is only going to get us so far, and that's going to be the impetus, right? Yeah. That's going to be the thing that starts it coming out the other way, that we got to start talking to each other and not at each other.
Yeah. I have a controversial opinion that the last decade was a lot of parents not noticing that their kids spent all day on 4chan, and now we're paying for some of that. And I'm not blaming them as parents necessarily. I'm just saying we're in a brave new weird time, and we kind of have our heads around it a little better now. And I think the future's bright for that. That kind of thing happening in the home and then sort of branching out from there. But yeah, I hope so. Any other thoughts around the table about the world of nonverbal communication? I mean, I just want to flip Tom off and have him know that it's all out of love. That's what I want, Tom. Are you cool with that? Tom Merritt, did we lose him?
He's giving you nonverbal communication.
I'm trying to do nonverbal communication.
Oh, he's giving me, sorry. I had to, my screen wasn't up.
That was well done.
No, absolutely. You know, I kind of think your theory about 4chan is icing, not cake. Yeah. It doesn't mean it's invalid. I think we would have a lot of the same things anyway, but the way we see it manifest is probably because of, not 4chan particularly, but because of that phenomenon, right, of people, you know, isolating themselves and interacting in a vacuum, so to speak. I thought maybe when Ryan was saying that the current political climate would encourage nonverbal communication, it might be because it left most of us speechless.
Oh, look at that. Hey, you've got a pun regardless of the circumstance or the conversation we're having. It's amazing.
Don't you think that, like,
giving points for that?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Go ahead, Chris.
Don't you think that, like, though, the desire, which to some people is extremely important for anonymity, is going to play a factor in this as well? And I've actually thought about the same thing, and admittedly maybe it's because I've read Snow Crash too many times, but like the idea of, like, them selling, you know, when the new CG like the Planet of the Apes movies, he's actually got, like, the little balls on his eyebrows, around his lips, you know, all the crease marks in his face. They sold, like, some sort of simple mask of that, so then you can set yourself to look like whatever the hell you want to, but still people can read your face.
Well,
it seems,
see,
to me, like, something like that would be some intermediary point to that's cool, to, yeah. To,
sure, like, I could see a place where the way that we get to, I mean, this is much more complicated than the way I'm going to simply state this, but so everyone forgive me for my generalizations, but it might be kind of cool. Imagine a future where our interactions on a platform like Facebook or Twitter or whatever, or let's say within video games, we're playing a competitive game of some sort, there's a lot of vitriol and kind of toxicity in there. Maybe one thing that would just solve that is if we had cameras built into our computers or our devices that we're playing these games on, if they could read our facial expressions in a way that they could convey them, not in the exact face that is mine, but in a more generalized face, but showed real signs of distress, of empathy, of happiness, of sadness, of whatever the thing is, you could in theory engender additional sympathetic responses from people if you knew what your words were doing to somebody, or you knew what the experience was doing to them, or whatever. It'd have to be subtle, and there's a million other questions around this, but you know, I like that idea. Like, I like anonymity in terms of people who want their privacy, but I don't like it as a thing to hide behind and yell insults and then have no repercussions from. So it'd be nice if you could shine just a little light on the middle ground and say, well, here's a way that we can see each other without really seeing each other. But I realize as I say that, there's a million complications to that. So I'd have to.
And on top of that, I think one of the points I wanted to try to get across is that right now we don't value the nonverbal aspects enough to make it a point to do that. Yeah. Like you need to turn on your camera so that I can have a conversation with you guys. You need to turn on and actually do FaceTime instead of just a phone call or sending a text. I think the pendulum is that we're going to value being able to see that, have those nonverbal communication experiences more than we do now. That's one of the ways the pendulum is going to start to come back. I want to be able to have a video call. I want to be able to see you in person. And I want to see your body language and your expressions, because that's more valuable than just communicating.
I completely agree. And that's the problem is, every time I've had like a disagreement with somebody online, if it gets real heavy, I will say, hey, I'm sending you a DM. Here's my email address. Let's talk in a forum that makes more sense. We can get on Skype or whatever. And a lot of times they just never answer. Like, that's the last I hear of it. But sometimes they do. And what ends up happening is we find a ton of middle ground we didn't know we had. And we may still disagree on a couple of points, but we find this humanity, even if it's just an email exchange. Mm-hmm. And yeah, more of that, please. You know.
Well, because a lot of the other problem, especially with Twitter and Facebook, is it's not just nonverbal. It's non-lexical communication that gets lost. I mean, tone of voice is gone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're cool could be read as you're cool. Same word, sir.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's the other thing. Tone is completely missing. Emojis sort of help, but not really. And then we get really good at gaming the system and becoming, you know, using emojis in ironic ways. And so you're never quite sure what they mean by saying okay or thumbs up. It could be the most sarcastic response ever.
Italics, a version of italics for sarcasm, for sincerity, for things like that, that we just like, President, okay, this I actually mean, this I only sort of mean, this, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And the downside of that is, like, even in, we were talking about Hearthstone earlier.
Hello.
in Hearthstone, when you say good game or well played,
well played.
In the early days, it was like, yeah, well, good job. You beat me. Thanks. Or whatever. Now I'm never sure. I think they're like, well played. You know, like, I don't know what they
amazing
mean.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Greetings.
Greetings. Anyway, this is all very, very fascinating. We'll probably get a lot of feedback about this one. We encourage it and welcome it at currentgeek@gmail.com. Speaking of which, we got an email from Nathan from PA, who wrote in and says, hi, Current Geek. I have a great idea for a film remake. Why not Kroll? I mean, think about it. Kroll is awesome. All my best, Nathan from PA. Well, Nathan, we did
one really good thing.
Yeah.
The glaive.
The glaive. That's it, right?
The weapon, right?
Yeah.
Is there anything else good in Kroll other than the weapon?
No.
I can't think of anything.
We watched it. It was our first movie for FilmSack we did back in 2009 or whatever we started the show, October of 2009. And it's a really bad movie with a really cool glaive in it. So, so sure, I guess so. Let's make, if you're going to do it though, Kroll needs to be, it either needs to go all in on just glaive focus, or they have to flesh the rest out.
Kroll 2, glaive rules.
Yeah. Glaive rules.
The glaive wars.
I mean,
they've made entire movies just about the weapon. That's a thing. We can make that up.
Sure. You just have to be. It's like John Wick. They know what they need to do with that, and they made it. Like, there was no like confusion. It's like, what do we need? Well, we need a guy who's just unstoppable, and if you kill his dog, he's gonna kill you. And let's do that for 2 hours, and it works because it has this pure, simple, refined focus. You could do that with Kroll. Just focus on the glaive and how it flies and cuts things up and comes back to you.
Is that Liam Neeson?
Yes, it is Liam Neeson.
Oh, my gosh.
Like the lesser scene, but equally as good for in the same way. The Sword and the Sorcerer. Do you remember that one?
Sure.
Where the guy's got the three-pronged sword that can fire the other two swords off.
Yeah.
I was like, I want that now when I was 10.
I like weird,
I don't know what I would have done.
Weird weapon stuff like that was a favorite growing up. I'd be fine if Kroll got its groove on. So sure, Nathan. Yeah. And we agree with you. Kroll is awesome.
In its way.
Yeah. Thanks.
All you need is Glaive.
All you need is Glaive. current geek at gmail.com is where these emails come to us, and that is going to do it for today's show. Before we get out of here, though, we do want to thank our guests for being here and give them a chance to tell people where they can be found on the internet. Let's start with Christopher. Where should people go?
Thank you. Yeah, it was really great to be here. Sorry, I was trying for the
non-verbal thing. Yes. Extra points. Well done.
You can find me, of course, at oneofus.net. You can find that on iTunes. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on Stitcher, or you can just go to oneofus.net, period. Listen to all my podcasts and all that stuff. We cover all sorts of stuff. We try to be as timely as we possibly can. We'll be coming up very shortly with our Game of Thrones season review, and as soon as I can get back to it after this podcast, Defenders, so I can do a season review of that.
Oh, yeah. That's I keep forgetting that's up. I got to watch that this weekend, or try to. Very nice. Ryan, anywhere you would like to send people's eyeballs?
Well, you can look at all the stuff I work at if you just go to any of the Blizzard sites. PlayOverwatch.com is my current baby, and we got lots of cool stuff coming up. If you want to chat at me, you can find me on Twitter at DiscoRax.
Nice.
DiscoRax.
He's a fine fellow to follow and to interact with on the platform of Twitter. I can confirm that. Well, thank you both for being here. Tom, Merritt, anything you'd like to add or mention before we go?
Yeah, just real quickly. We're still doing a podcast in support of Rob Reed's book, After On, where we talk about all the real technology and science behind the story about a super AI waking up. So go to after-on.com. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can also get sample chapters on Medium. And this week we're talking to EFF director, executive director Cindy Cohn about privacy and the real legal assaults on privacy that are mimicked in the book. So that is coming, that is out there right now. There's also episodes about terrorism, about synthetic biology, about AI, of course. So check that out once again at after-on.com.
Very nice. If you listen to the Frog Pants Mega Feed, you'll be hearing those as well on there. Very excited about that. And if you'd like to watch me play video games every day at 4 p.m. Mountain Time until about 5:30, there is now a Monday through Thursday schedule where that happens. So if you want to watch me play everything from Blizzard games to weird stuff on Steam to whatever, that's happening, and it's happening now. So check that out at the schedule at frogpants.tv. It's going to do it for us. Oh, my goodness. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Currentgeek.com is our website. Go there, and you'll find all the pertinent details, contact information, and more. That will do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for our guests. We'll see you next time.
And now you can all go back to watching The Defenders.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we reviewed the latest updates in a lawsuit where HBO comedian John Oliver is being sued by coal baron Robert Murray for a critical show segment on Murray and the coal industry that aired a few weeks ago. John Oliver has done well since spinning off from his role as lead British correspondent on Jon Stewart's The Daily Show. Last Week Tonight is his news and commentary show that plays weekly on HBO. In addition to covering current events, Oliver uses this platform to put together interesting satirical pieces on industries and organizations that may have things not quite right with them. His targets this summer season have included the Border Patrol, the dialysis industry, anti-vaxxers, and the coal industry. And it's that coal topic that brings us to this lawsuit. Oliver focused on what he deemed an industry in decline for decades as a counterpoint to President Trump's repeated promises to bring back thousands of coal mining jobs. Apparently, during research for preparing this segment, Robert Murray, the CEO of leading coal companies like Murray Energy, came to loggerheads with the comedian and his showrunners. Murray threatened, before the coal segment aired, to sue Oliver and HBO for any defamation, harassment, or other injury caused by the segment. Of course, that threat did not deter Oliver. If anything, it made him go after Murray even more directly than originally intended. He called the coal executive a geriatric Dr. Evil when covering some of the lowlights of Murray's career, including a 2007 mine collapse in Utah and a questionable explanation of the reasons why that occurred. Oliver also recounted a silly story about Murray telling his workers that the idea for starting a mine company came to him from a squirrel. The segment ends in Oliver's typical over-the-top silly fashion, with a man in a squirrel costume holding a check made out to Eat Bob. Murray did sue in West Virginia court, claiming that the segment was a planned, ruthless character assassination intended to incite viewers to do harm to Mr. Murray and his company, as well as claiming that the statements made served as false light invasion of privacy and intentional infliction of emotional distress. That's a lot to cover, but it all can be essentially boiled down to what is basically a slander or defamation claim against Oliver. A first volley in the case did not go Oliver's way this week, as a motion to remove this case to federal court instead of local state court in West Virginia failed when a federal judge decided that the alleged defamatory statements made by Oliver about Murray would also likely negatively impact Murray's business. Thus, Oliver and HBO will now need to fight this out in a jurisdiction that very well may not be very favorable to them. However, Oliver does have the national spotlight on this case, and it invokes interesting questions of how far free speech protection goes. The ACLU, always ready to defend free speech, has filed a hilarious amicus brief that you can read online if you want a good laugh at a legal document with section headings like, "Anyone can legally say, eat Bob." The ACLU makes strong arguments in defense of political satire and critical reporting, while also noting that Murray has unsuccessfully sued many other outlets for defamation-type suits in the last decade, when he didn't like what was expressed about him. So this high-profile case could help define just how far free speech protection goes when it comes to these types of shows. The bottom line is, it really should come as no surprise that the strong comedic commentary of Oliver and other similar comedians sometimes leads to lawsuits like this one. Oliver probably pushed the envelope a bit by pointing his ire so directly at Murray, but it's hard to see how a context like this is not protected by the broad free speech protections in the U.S. If this case happens to go against Oliver, it could mean significant changes for many similar shows, and that would cause a chill in the commentary that most find valuable, even if we don't always agree with the views of that commentary. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.